We'll call the meeting to order, and I don't have a quorum yet, I don't believe, so we've got the university in front of us today, and President Brunitz is going to be the whole show, from what I understand. Welcome to the committee, Mr. President, and he has requested that that we allow him to go through his whole presentation before there are any questions, so you must have an attention span like me, Mr. President. We're getting sidetracked, you're off on a tangent. So I will afford you that luxury. Why don't you just go ahead and begin, and then we'll open up for questions. I did give a meeting and a half for the university's presentation, so
all right.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure to be here. I wasn't quite sure what the dress code was, but I did decide to wear a tie. I read in the newspaper that at least the first couple of months were supposed to be somewhat less formal.
Mr. President, I was totally misquoted on that. I was, but I liked the quote after I heard it on the TV. I really thought it sounded like me, actually. So.
Chair Rukavina, we already have something in common. I'm misquoted every day, particularly when it comes to athletics. But anyway, it's a great pleasure to be with you and to share with you the biennial budget proposal of the University of Minnesota. And as I begin, I'd like to acknowledge that Regent Stephen Hunter is with us from the University's Board of Regents. I believe he is the only regent who is here with us today. This is our 2008-2009 biennial budget request, and I'd really like to cover three areas, and I'll try to cover a couple of them very quickly. I'd like to give a little bit of overview of the university status and what I would regard as our accomplishment profile. I want to spend most of my time talking about the biennial budget request itself. And then I know increasingly we all are concerned about the rising cost of higher education, the tuition rate increases for students, and I think the issues and challenges of keeping higher education accessible and affordable, and I'd like to make a few comments about those issues before I close my remarks. I think we all know the university has been around for quite a while. It started about 157 years ago, and I regularly say to public audiences that I find it somewhat inspiring, I'd say absolutely inspiring, that the people who settled the territory of Minnesota decided to found a university before they applied to become a state in the Union. And I think that says a lot about our people and the commitment of legislators, legislatures and governors that have preceded us here this afternoon, and their longstanding commitment not only to the University of Minnesota, but also, I think, more broadly to the education, the educational needs of our fellow citizens. And I'd like to say I think the university has benefited greatly. I think we've built a great University of Minnesota here in a state of roughly 5 million people. I'm deeply honored every day to show up and do my part with you to carry out the vision that people who preceded us had for not only the university but our state. And I'm here today to talk about why I think an investment in higher education, an investment in education, I would argue, at all levels, is absolutely critical to the University of Minnesota and to Minnesota's future. When people think about the University of Minnesota, they typically think about the Twin Cities campus located in this vibrant metropolitan area. And it truly is a big part of what comprises the University of Minnesota. Now, last year, it was the second largest campus in the United States. It is arguably the campus with the most diverse range of academic programs and responsibilities. It is the state's research and land-grant university, and many other states who have two or three or more institutions of higher education who have assumed those historical and contemporary responsibilities. But you can see on this particular chart that we're all over the state of Minnesota, represented in those yellow dots, and that's only a sampling of our locations. Our buildings that comprise about 28 million assignable square feet of space, And those dots somehow in one way accommodate about 65,000 full-time students, degree-seeking students on the campuses of the University of Minnesota, 18 regional extension offices, 13 research and outreach centers that many of you know very much about and a great deal about, and a wide range of education and service centers that are not represented, not yet recorded on this map. For example, the Hibbing Dental Clinic is one of our partnership efforts with Hibbing Community College, Community and Technical College, and we're deeply proud of the kind of work that goes on there. With these resources, and I believe particularly the human resources that are represented by the 19,000 people who work at the University of Minnesota, we happen to believe that we have a tremendous impact on the state of Minnesota, and I think we have the potential to even have a greater impact on the state's future. I'd like to share a little bit of our accomplishments, the profile that I think characterizes at least some of the essence of the University of Minnesota. And one of the things I mentioned just a moment ago is we are Minnesota's research and land-grant university, and people ask me regularly, well, what does that really mean? And it means a lot of things, but one of the things it means is that this university is primarily responsible for competing not just nationally, but around the world for competitive research and contracts and grants. Last year, that amounted to roughly $576 million in research awards. We think this year we will reach $600 million in research awards. That amount of money is approximately 98 cents of every single dollar that comes in through this mechanism of competitive grants and contracts to institutions of higher education, public or private, in the state of Minnesota. It creates a tremendous impact on Minnesota's economy. The U.S. Department of Commerce estimates that 32 jobs are created for every $1 million of university research and development, and that's in the private economy. That's not just jobs on the university campus. That's nearly 19,000 jobs created through this activity in the state of Minnesota alone. For each $1 invested in university-based research and development, the Department of Commerce estimates that it creates $1.70 of economic activity outside the university. That's nearly $1 billion of economic benefit to the economy of Minnesota in the year 2006. I often think about, as the economists do, what they argue is the counterfactual argument. What would happen to Minnesota if we were to lose $100 million? Let's say it were to go down, if you will, about 16 to 17%. That would represent a loss of about 3,000 private jobs and an annual economic loss of nearly $150 million. And these grim statistics ignore the potential benefits that flow from the research and development that occurs on the University of Minnesota campuses and the research stations around the state. You know, and I'm going to share a few of those with you, but those are the kinds of ideas that find their ways into patents and new discoveries that feed Minnesota's private economy. The University of Minnesota recently was considered to be the fourth most promising university nationally in its technology transfer, that is the promise of its patents and the potential of its technology across the United States. So that's a lot about research, but what also happens is the University of Minnesota is one of the great educational institutions in our state. Recently we did an alumni survey and found that alumni mostly from the Institute of Technology and the Carlson School of Management, but other places in the state as well, had formed over 10,000 companies in the state of Minnesota and another 9,000 companies outside of Minnesota across the country and the world. In Minnesota, these companies employ 500,000 people and nationally 600,000 additional people. In Minnesota, they generate $100 billion of annual economic activity, and if you take the national contributions, it's another $130 billion of national economic activity each and every year. I mentioned that we have 65,000 degree-seeking students on the campuses of the University of Minnesota. About 15,000 of them are graduate students, nearly 4,000 professional students, more than 13,000 graduates walked across the stage in 2005-2006, and nearly 50% of those degrees were in what we call STEM degrees, in the areas of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And that's nearly 50% of Minnesota's total. I often say, think about Minnesota's healthcare system without the University of Minnesota. More than two-thirds of the practicing doctors, about 80% of the practicing veterinarians, 80% of the pharmacists, advanced practice nurses, public health professionals are all prepared and trained at the University of Minnesota. This is also a university that connects the public issues in a very important way. We are the state's land-grant university, and so the public mission of the university truly matters. I think about the pioneering research of Ansel Keys, a physiologist who worked in the inside of the old Memorial Stadium and found the link between cholesterol and heart disease and revolutionized the way we think about our own health and nutrition. I think about 50 cold hardy soybean varieties that have been developed by researchers at the University of Minnesota that thrive in Minnesota's climate. Minnesota farmers produce roughly 10% of the U.S. soybean crop, and it's one-third of the agricultural exports from the state of Minnesota. I think about IT professor E.W. Davis, who secured 19 patents over 40 years about how to unlock iron ore from taconite. And I think about the profound impact of his work on Minnesota's iron range, and I'll say a little bit more about the impact of these discoveries on higher education in our state. The medical device industry owes a lot of its origin to the pioneering faculty and researchers at the University of Minnesota. Richard DeWall, Walt Lillehei, developed the first artificial heart-lung machine. Earl Bakken in his garage, an IT graduate, actually developed the discoveries that led to the thriving Medtronic that we have in our own backyard. Robert Vince, the director of the University Center for Drug Design, and his graduate student, Miha, developed what we call a Carbaver compound, which is responsible for the foundation of drugs, AIDS treatment drugs. Zyogen, the drug that was derived from their discoveries, is literally treating hundreds of thousands of people, AIDS patients, throughout the world. And occasionally, there's some other interesting things. Last year, you adopted the Honeycrisp apple as your state apple, on the recommendation of a fourth grade class, as I recall. And that, too, was a discovery, along with many, many other varieties of apples at the University of Minnesota. I'd like now to turn my attention to the university's budget and give you some sense of how the university's budget is organized. And I'd have to say, in looking at this chart and reflecting on the different components of this chart, that Minnesota's economy is among the most diverse economies of any organization that you will find anywhere in the state of Minnesota, and I would argue it's probably more diverse than most national organizations. You can see in this chart, in the lower right-hand portion, that the state provides about 26 cents of every dollar that the university expends on an annual basis. And the point I'd like to make about this investment is this 26% leverages a lot of very productive activity for our state. About 19% of the university's operating budget comes from tuition and fees. And this gives, according to Moody's, a rating service, a very strong market position for the University of Minnesota and one of the most enviable credit ratings of institutions of our type around the country. More than half of the university's budget, if you look at this next chart, is comprised of grants and contracts, gifts, educational sales, and what we call auxiliary enterprises. These are all dedicated to particular purposes. So when people look at the university's budget, they say, we have a lot of money. Why don't you just move that money around? This $1.3 billion is highly dedicated. For example, if a person gives a gift to the University of Minnesota, 98% of those gifts are for particular purposes, for a particular scholarship or an endowed chair to pursue cardiac research or for some pre-designed purpose that makes the money less than fungible. You can't move it from one column to the other. What's really important about the university's budget and important to our discussion here today are the parts of the budget that are highly fungible, that cover the core operating expenses of the University of Minnesota. And that portion of this diagram is comprised of state appropriations and tuition. But this part of the diagram that you're looking at, nearly $1.3 billion, is extraordinarily important to the university and to our state. Let me give you a sense of what it funds. It funds 87% of the total dollars spent at the University of Minnesota on research. So these dollars really are the source of much of the activity that goes to research. 84% of the money on this left-hand side of the diagram goes to fund what we call public service, the public engagement of the university, our extension services, and the activities that are a part of connecting the university to the needs of communities throughout Minnesota and beyond. 70% of the money in this part of the diagram is spent on equipment, much of it research equipment, laboratory equipment. And 70% of this money is spent on repairs, maintenance, and supplies. In other words, the core infrastructure that supports the education and work of the University of Minnesota. The right-hand side of the diagram, what we're going to talk about mostly today, is the university's source of what we call unrestricted funds. And it's primarily comprised of the state appropriation and tuition and fees. And that's the part, as I indicated, that is unrestricted and covers the core infrastructure, the education, if you will, and much of the public service activities of the University of Minnesota. So why is it that this part of the diagram, this unrestricted, what we call the unrestricted part, student tuition and fees, state appropriations, is so important to the University of Minnesota? 70% of this money is spent on instruction, so the education of our students comes from this part of the financial diagram. 54% of it is spent on the total compensation of our faculty and staff. But this money covers 72% of the total spending on faculty compensation. And of course, those are the people who are primarily driving the agenda to create the $1.3 billion that we just talked about. 77% of this money is spent on student services. That is, 70% of the cost of student services comes from this source. Just to take three colleges, our largest college is the College of Liberal Arts. 93% of its budget comes from this source. 78% of the budget of the Institute of Technology, the primary source of degrees in science, technology, and engineering. And about 75% of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Science comes from this source of our budget. New hires for the Cancer Center, people who do freshwater research at UMD, some of the support for the Center for Transportation Studies, the St. Paul Campus Career Center, all of these have derived some resources from student tuition and fees and state appropriations in the last couple of years. Now I want to spend some time. That gives you kind of a sense of the university, a little bit about its accomplishment profile, some understanding of how the budget is structured and organized. And now I want to turn my attention and yours to the proposed biennial budget and make just a couple of comments about how it's organized. Basic architecture of this budget plan is organized in two columns. The left-hand column, the gold column, I don't know why we picked gold, but now that I think about it, it was probably the best choice of colors, covers the core basic costs of the University of Minnesota. Those are the core basic infrastructure costs. Those are the costs that are necessary to keep the university going year after year after year. That's the compensation, the basic educational programs, that's the technology backbone and infrastructure of the university, and I might argue it also includes the operation or operating expenses related to buildings and debt that the university sustains. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. The first part of this is concerned with really sustaining the university's quality and competitiveness, and I mentioned it covers the core operational costs. In the right-hand column, the maroon part of this diagram, we're talking about some investments that we think are critically important to increasing the quality and competitiveness of the university, and we're identifying some areas that we think are relatively important, I'd say extremely important, to Minnesota's future. They have to do with strengths that we think the university has and what we consider to be comparative advantages, but also real opportunities to make advancements in connecting the university to Minnesota's economy and quality of life. And I want to spend a little bit of time on that. Much of this budget is based on the last 2 years or more of hard work in taking the university through a very painstaking strategic planning and positioning process. And I'll talk a little bit more about this. And basically what we've been doing the last couple of years is undertaking a very deep self-examination on the into the university's future, trying to decide where we have a need to make hard choices, to reduce costs, to set priorities, and to really move the university in a direction that we think not only makes good use of the public resources, but also positions the university much more strongly for the future. This has involved some very painful choices. We restructured the University of Minnesota Extension Service. We closed at least 3 colleges and combined them with other colleges. You probably saw a few demonstrators who didn't think that was a particularly good idea on the Mall of the Capitol. We've developed some new structures that bring people together across critically important fields, a new institute on the environment that you'll hear something about, an institute that provides the umbrella for a lot of very, very exciting research under the university's initiative on renewable energy and the environment. We happen to think we're one of the best research centers in the country, if not the world, when it comes to looking for alternatives to fossil-based fuels. This is an exercise that led to the development of something we call the Consortium for Postsecondary Academic Success, to take the resources of the University of Minnesota and work collaboratively with school districts throughout our state to try to improve the preparation of Minnesota high school students for careers, successful careers in higher education. It involved literally thousands of people working on about 35 to 40 different task forces over the last 2 to 3 years to create this plan and this vision for the university's future, and we're very much still in this process of continuous transformation. Let me now talk about the left-hand side of this diagram, what we call sustaining quality and competitiveness. And as you can see in this particular part of the chart, the largest single investment we're asking the state to help us with is in the compensation of our faculty and staff. That's about $35 million a year. It proposes an annual salary increase of about 3.25%. The second major part of this proposed budget is called Advancing Education. It is projected at nearly $25 million. This includes a whole range of activities that we think are necessary to upgrade, improve, if you will, transform the quality of education for our students. It involves something called the Founders Free Tuition Program for low-income students, a very ambitious baccalaureate writing initiative across the curriculum of the campuses of the University of Minnesota, undergraduate research opportunities that we think are part of the distinctive academic profile of the University of Minnesota, graduate student support to keep the university competitive in recruiting and maintaining the 40% of the graduate and professional student population who come to the University of Minnesota, seek degrees, and largely settle in Minnesota and make their careers in our state. A transformed university-wide honors program, great upgrades or important upgrades to advising and career services to to keep students on track, to make sure they make the successful transition that we expect from their academic study into successful careers, mostly in Minnesota. The third part of this request that is under sustaining quality and competitiveness deals with technology and related infrastructure. And I don't have time to go into all the details, and if I tried, I'd be in the deep end of the pool pretty fast. But I think it's safe to say that the University of Minnesota is at the heart of Minnesota's technology backbone. It is the center of high-speed computing, high-speed networks that are necessary not only to sustain the work at the University of Minnesota, but they form the foundation for the flourishing partnership with Mayo Clinic and also increasingly partnerships with the public and the nonprofit sectors of Minnesota. And we're asking for nearly $7 million in that particular area. I mentioned just a few moments ago that one of the parts of our budget that is really critical, about nearly $32 million for the biennium, deals with facilities, operations, and maintenance. That's debt on new buildings, new operating expenses, what it takes to open and keep buildings going. That's increased cost that we are reallocating from the internal budget resources of the University of Minnesota. So that, in summary, is sort of the architecture of what we say is sort of the core operating budget of the University of Minnesota. I now want to turn my attention to a part of the budget that we think is exciting, we think it's transformative, and we think it represents some very important investments and opportunities for the University of Minnesota and our state. I'll try to scroll through these very quickly so we have ample time for comments and questions. The first part of this seems repetitive with the conversation we just had about sustaining the quality and competitiveness of the university, but it deals with what we call competitive market-based compensation, which is aimed at only a subset of the people who work at the University of Minnesota. Every year, every single year, about 60 to 75 people, the university's most talented people, have offers to join the faculties or businesses in some other state. And we have to fight to keep these people. And one of the reasons it has become increasingly difficult for us to do this is that our faculty compensation is now ranked about 27th out of 30 nationally when it comes to the top 30 research universities. So this particular request is all about recruiting and retaining probably no more than 15 to 20% of the most talented people at the university who are actually in a global marketplace. These are the people who really give a very, very special level of distinction and productivity to the University of Minnesota. Now, I've left out about 80 to 85%, and I want to tell you those people are very, very productive. But this is all about trying to keep the university at the really, really cutting edge of major competitive universities across the country. The second area that we're very excited about is called Health, Workforce, and Clinical Sciences. And there are a number of things in this particular category. One is a new Center for Allied Health Services. This is a statewide program designed to build academic partnerships with MinSKU institutions, four-year institutions, and the University of Minnesota Duluth to really expand our capacity to fill many of the vacancies or the vast number of vacancies that occur now today in health systems across the state of Minnesota. For example, clinical laboratory sciences would be one of the areas that would be referenced. And the idea here is to leverage the capacity of the public institutions across the state of Minnesota so that we can really begin to deal with these critical shortages using electronically based learning platforms, using the science curriculum that already exists in places like St. Cloud or Winona and many other places around the state. And we think it's a really exciting, innovative idea to address these chronic workforce problems that we're going to see not just today, but probably see magnified in the future. This also includes a new doctorate of nursing practice to try to prepare more faculty to deal with the serious nursing shortages we have across the country, a new center on American Indian and minority health to deal with serious health disparities in subpopulations across the state of Minnesota, improvements to clinical medical education, strengthened investment in what we call clinical translational science fields, particularly in areas like cancer, heart, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, transplantation, and immunology, just to name a few fields. And this is all about speeding the rate of translation from basic science to clinical application. It currently takes about 17 years for a discovery in the laboratory to find its way into a new drug or a new medical treatment that can prevent disease or save lives. As someone who's just a few weeks away from a Medicare card, I have a real interest in this particular investment, and I think we ought to accelerate this 17 years. Think about this for just a moment. The next category deals with science and engineering. I mentioned that nearly 50% of the degrees in science, technology, and engineering come from the University of Minnesota. This is all about moving investments to the next generation in science and engineering, and these are areas where we think our state particularly excels. What's in here? A new medical device center, which would be a strong partnership with the thriving medical device industries in Minnesota, investments in what we call nanotechnology and neuroscience, and an expanded civil engineering engineering program at the University of Minnesota Duluth. The final part of this portion of our budget deals with the environment, what we call agricultural systems, renewable energy. And these are investments that expand on considerable strengths at the University of Minnesota, particularly in the area of environment, to establish a new institute on the environment, to work on serious issues of food systems and healthy food supply, that is food safety, biofuels and renewable energy, and animal health. For example, there's a veterinary diagnostic laboratory that is one of the best in the country. It needs some infusion of new money under this particular budget. I might also mention, just as an aside, that our epidemiologists at least tell me that 10 of the 11 most devastating infectious diseases in humans have started recently in animals. And this connection between animal health and human health is getting increasingly important. You don't have to just look at avian bird flu. There are many other connections that people worry about as well. This next chart is the summary that I've just covered. It summarizes the university's request in all of these categories that I've mentioned for fiscal year 2008 and fiscal year 2009. It gives the biennial totals in the third column. And on the right-hand side, you'll see the governor's recommendation on the university's budget. The governor recommended approximately 50% of the university's requested amount in terms of the base budget request, that is in recurring dollars. There was another $25 million that the governor recommended related to the performance bonus program that he outlined in his State of the State address. And I think you know a fair amount of it about that. That's one-time money. And additional money was recommended for the Mayo University Partnership, but historically that money has not been in the higher education budget. That has been out of the deed budget as an economic development initiative. In fact, the original agreement was that it would not be in the higher education budget and not be considered an offset to the university's budget. I think it's a very, very important program. I think we're getting real traction from this partnership, but I just wanted to make that at least minor editorial aside. I think it belongs in the economic development side of the state's budget, not in the higher education target. I mentioned we're self-funding facilities at approximately $32 million a year and the related operating costs that goes with them. And I'll say a little bit more about the relation of tuition to this budget in just a moment. I want to say just a quick thing about the governor's recommendation. My goal here today is to convince you that you could do much better than his recommendation, you could fund the entire budget request of the University of Minnesota. Nothing would make me happier. But let me just simply say I do appreciate the fact that the governor recognized the academic priorities, the research priorities in this budget, but you can see the zeros in the top two rows indicated he did not put any money in areas that have to do with advancing education or the compensation of our employees. And those are the basic core operating costs of the University of Minnesota. This recommendation is about $20 million below the recurring budget appropriation that the university received approximately 2 years ago. And so it's another reason why I'm urging you to take very seriously the budget we have before you. I know you have a good many issues pressing on you at the moment, but we simply do not believe that this recommendation will get the university to where it needs to be, to sustain its operations, to pay its basic operating costs, and I think equally important, to invest in critical areas that we believe are important for the future of the university and the future of our state. Let me spend a little time on tuition and make a couple of comments before I close here today. You're looking at a first-generation college graduate, someone who gets up every day and thinks about these issues and cares deeply about these rising costs and the impact on our students and families. And I'll do some self-promotion in that vein in just a few moments. If you look at the far left side of this diagram, you can see that we pushed these tuition rates up pretty high. That was the time when the university sustained a $185 million base reduction to its budget, 15% of its base budget, and I would say Minsku sustained the same level of reduction over a two-year period. In addition, during that 2 years, and this is something that people often don't reflect upon, the university had to eat all of its inflationary costs. So I figure within 6 months of my appointment, my honeymoon at the University of Minnesota, I had to work with my colleagues to solve a $250 million problem, $250 million. And it was inevitable that we had to push tuition up much higher than I think is desirable. I met with every employee group. I looked them in the eye and I asked them to take a hard wage and salary freeze without even step increases, which had never been done at the University of Minnesota before. We laid off about 550 people during this period, a serious reduction in our workforce. We cut our budget to the bone. We deferred investments. We restructured offices. I mentioned some of this. Extension was restructured across the state of Minnesota. We eliminated programs. We reallocated money. And I would say to you that in balancing this budget, more of it was balanced by doing those things, cutting, sacrificing, reorganizing the budget, than was accomplished through the rise in tuition. And we agreed with our board that that was going to be one of the framing and fundamental principles. Given that roughly $111 million of legislative support in the last biennium, I'm pleased to say we were able to drive this down into the range of about 7.5%, close to 7%, and we were more successful at driving other non-tuition costs even lower. And I'm really hopeful that we can sustain an even lower trajectory as we go into the next 2 years, and you can see that reflected in the yellow part of the diagram. I think it's extremely important. Our board, for example, has debated these issues and adopted a set of what we consider to be important principles to guide our thinking on tuition. We believe higher education fees should be accessible. It should be affordable. There should be some shared responsibility, obviously, involving parents and families in the cost of higher education, but we need to keep it reasonable. We need to keep it benchmarked to the rising costs. It shouldn't be a roller coaster kind of ride. for our students and families. It should be more predictable from year to year. If you're trying to do a budget and you're a young person and something spikes 15%, you know, back to back in a 2-year period, that gets to be very, very difficult. It's one of the reasons we made scholarship support a real priority at the University of Minnesota, and I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. What I'd like to show you next is a diagram. I want to come back. I'll make a couple of extra comments about tuition in just a moment. This particular diagram gives you a sense of the change in annual state general fund appropriations plus tuition. So if you look at the full sweep of the bar, you can see what has happened during this period of time. And from the period of the fiscal year 2000 until roughly 2007, the university's budget from these two sources, remember these are the core, to go back to the earlier comments I made, these are the core sources for the university's operating budget. This is what determines whether we can meet our costs year in and year out. Those went up about 4.3%. The state's budget during this period went up 4.9%. I'd like to argue, and not that the state was profligate and didn't manage its money well, I'd like to argue that we did. And we tried very, very hard during this period to look at all kinds of opportunities for cost reduction and to mitigate these costs on our students. There's a real good story about what the university did during this period. I shared some of it with you. But I think the point really needs to be made that this is a period where we've tightened our belt, and I think we've made the right choices to keep the university moving forward, to keep the university healthy in a period of some fiscal austerity. Now, I talked a little bit about those tuition principles, and I wanted to say just a couple of other things. When we think about financing the future of higher education and keeping higher education accessible and affordable, I think the state of Minnesota ought to take some pride in a number of important things. We have arguably one of the best, and I would argue one of the most generous, state grant programs where the money follows the students and students have the opportunity to make choices. I think it is one of the best. At last reckoning, it was about the third or fourth most generous per capita in the United States. We have some things that our state has developed, have the wisdom and vision to develop, something called the Iron Range Scholarship Program. 20% of the freshmen at the University of Minnesota, 20% of these freshmen now receive the Iron Range Scholarship. That's over 1,000 students every year. And these students do not just come from the part of Minnesota that created this great benefit. They come from all over the state. They come from southeast Minnesota, southwest Minnesota. The university has worked with some help from the state legislature and from private donors to start something called the Founders Opportunity Free Tuition Scholarship Program. And under this program, a student who qualifies for a Pell Grant under federal criteria gets a free tuition and fee scholarship at the campuses of the University of Minnesota. This year, freshmen and sophomores and transfer students will be covered by this program. It will cover approximately 2,000 students. Next year, juniors will be added. The final year, seniors will be added. Approximately 4,500 students will benefit eventually from this program, largely capitalized by private gifts and internal reallocation to keep higher education affordable. Their family incomes are estimated at approximately $26,000 a year using the current cohort. And about 30% of these students are students of color, and they're very, very talented students. We started something called the Promise for Tomorrow Scholarship Program. Now 6,700 students get these scholarships. This was all money raised privately and matched through other gifts that we received and internal resources. That particular campaign that's still ongoing has exceeded $150 million of private support. The point I'm really trying to make is that I think it requires a lot of different strategies to address this problem, including asking people like us who have benefited from higher education to give something back not to be a part of the generation, the first generation to pull the ladder of opportunity up behind them, but to give something back to the young people who are coming to our colleges and universities today. So anyway, these are just a few of the things that we've done, along with state support, to really keep higher education accessible and affordable. But I want to make one point as I close this part of the discussion. We want to keep driving down these costs so they're reasonable for our students. But I want to tell you that I will not be in a very good position to recommend to the university's Board of Regents a 4.5% increase if we receive the governor's recommendation. So I want to be really clear about that and firm. And that indicates that this university, in the midst of all this, will be reallocating very, very substantial internal dollars in the process. As public leaders, I know you face very difficult choices in the context of your available resources. I know they're difficult, but I'm asking you to strengthen your commitment to education in Minnesota. The university, MinSCU, the generous, I think you need to make improvements in the excellent and generous state grant program. I believe the university's biennial budget is ambitious. One of your members told me that today. But I think it's reasonable. I think it builds on the work that we have done to improve and transform the University of Minnesota over the last several years. It builds upon our goal, and it supports our goal to be among one of the best public university systems in the world. And it identifies priorities that we think are absolutely critical to the university, the university's future, and the future of our state. We want the University of Minnesota to continue as a place of study, learning, and discovery for Minnesota's highly motivated and prepared high school graduates, while at the same time providing support to ensure access regardless of family income. I believe this request will maintain our excellence, our quality in education, research, and public engagement, areas where we are now, I think, a strong leader. But it will also serve to advance the university in areas where we have an opportunity to excel, not just as a university, but also as a state. These are also areas of comparative advantage to the economy of Minnesota, areas such as health, science and technology, energy and the environment, food systems, agriculture, animal health. All of these are in the core of Minnesota's future. It will continue to leverage the state's investment to advance our resources and Minnesota's economy and quality of life. I happen to believe, and I not only get paid to say this, but I believe it, that the University of Minnesota is one of the best investments the state makes, not only today, but in its own future. We need your support, and I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share these ideas with you. And I look forward to your comments and questions.
Well, thank you very much, President Bruins. I guess before I open it up to the rest of the members, I'd like to thank you. And just to clarify your statement at the end about tuition, you've gotten about half of your request from the governor's proposal. Does that translate then your 4.5 and 4.5 that's built in your budget to 9 and 9?
On tuition?
Yes.
Chair Rukavina, I think it's too early to estimate what that tuition level would be, but I can tell you what my personal position is. It probably is a Surgeon General's a warning or two about making public statements this early in the legislative process.
Could be hazardous here.
Yeah, right. You got it. But I do not believe it would be fair or prudent to put the gap in the budget solely on the backs of students. I mean, it's not consistent with the philosophy of our board and of the university community. And I said, when asked this question recently by a reporter, how would you handle a gap of this size? And I basically said there are three or four things that could be done. One is you can defer some of the investments that you think are really important or spread them out over a longer period of time. That's clearly one of the strategies we would use. We would probably cut more deeply into our budget I think that has some adverse consequences. I can tell you, for example, when we had, in the period of let me just make an editorial aside if you don't mind. In the period of 1995 to 2002 or 3, the grants and contracts to the University of Minnesota, mostly from competitive federal sources, went up about 6.5 to 7% a year. They've gone up 0.3% since then. Now, you can argue that the university hasn't been good enough in competing. You can argue that federal funding has been flattening, and those things are obviously true. But I think it's also safe to argue that when you fail to invest, you pay compound interest as a state, and you lose a great deal of your competitive position. So in balancing a budget with a gap of the kind that we see here, we would defer investments, we'd have to cut deeply, and we probably would have to push a little more on tuition. But I'd be less than honest with you today if I said we were going to push that all on the backs of students. I don't think there's any appetite to do that after what we've been through and what our students have been through. We'd work really hard to avoid that, but I think it would be inevitable. If we had to accept the governor's budget today, I'd be less than honest with you. I would have to go to the Board of Regents and ask for an increase about 4.5%. Or otherwise, we'd compromise the quality of their education, we'd compromise the quality of service we were providing our students, and we simply couldn't keep the university strong enough in that transition to, I think, be really competitive.
No, President, we've had students from all over the state of Minnesota and all different colleges and private colleges and Minskew and your students here, and some of their stories are horrifying. And it seems to me that those cuts have been pushed on to the students, and I realize there have been drastic cuts made in your faculty and your system in general also at the same time, but I'm just curious, and given the fact that there was this alleged surplus, you know, this year, and at least one-time money, why did you come in, both you and Minskew, come in with a 4.5% increase built in, tuition increase built in on top of your request for compensation that was supposedly going to handle, you know, the inflationary cost of doing business? Why did you do that?
Chair Rukavina, I think you'd have to go back. Could I get that slide up that shows the pie graph, our budget? You'd have to go back, I think, to the architecture of the university's budget or the structure of the university's budget. It's about 20% of the operating costs now of the University of Minnesota. It, too, must go up at some reasonable level, or the gap in that revenue has to be covered from some other source. Now, if the state of Minnesota wants to make a deal, you know, I'm sure we could find a way to drive this down. But the point I'm really trying to make, you can't take 20% of your revenue off the board, hold that constant or reduce it without finding some other way to increase the resources in your budget, or otherwise you're really looking at some pretty dire decisions. You know, to throw a lot of people overboard, reduce your employment. Any organization that does that, as we have over this period of time and keeps doing it, is basically going to build a condition of anemia and really reduce its competitiveness. And you put at risk the 26% of the budget that comes through competitive grants and contracts. That starts to go down. It has adverse impact on Minnesota's economy in a very real sense. And it also takes out the research, development, and innovation that Minnesota needs to fuel its economy. I don't think Minnesota can compete solely on price. We've got to be a state that continues to push on the forefront of innovation, to create new ideas and to find new ways to get these ideas into products and jobs and to grow Minnesota's economy. So it is a difficult choice, and we felt on the heels of the, you know, if you look back, we still have a huge difference between the university's state support in 2002 and where we are today. And yet the costs have continued to go up at higher rates than the CPI in this period of time. So part of what you're seeing here is, in this request, is an effort to try to make up some ground. We'll never make it up completely. I mean, you just never do that. But we need to keep the university, I think, much stronger and in a competitive position. And I don't think you can take 20% of your revenue off the table, freeze it, and expect the university like ours can keep the kind of investments going that are necessary or to meet the rising costs that we face each and every day. The other thing I would say here is I really think we need to be careful that we don't see the solution to the funding of our students only in terms of state support and tuition. We need to be creative as a community to grow the money supply. And I think that's the reason I spent a little time talking about the university experience. The university has really worked during the most adverse period in its history to grow the money supply and to find ways to keep higher education accessible and affordable to students. And I think it's a great story. I'd like to keep that story going.
Well, sometimes when we grow the money supply, we cut the taxes for those that got the most growth out of the money supply.
Yes, but you don't have to give it out that way if you're at the University of Minnesota. You can pay attention to the needs of students who have the greatest economic need, and that's been our philosophy.
Representative Moll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Brunings, I greatly appreciate you coming here before us. It's an honor that you took your time out to present the budget yourself. A couple comments and then a question. First, we've, as Chair Rukavina pointed out, we've taken a lot of testimony. I'm a Minsky faculty member myself and have great concern about the rising tuition costs for our students and the fact that you're working to hold that down. We appreciate. You obviously have to balance that with the challenge of the research that's a requirement of your university. That's an economic engine for our state, and that can be challenging for you. I know it's challenging at a Minsky level. On your level, it's another level of importance. My question for you is, in this focus on research and really extreme commitment to go down that road, at what point do you make decisions or ethical decisions upon what research you would like to promote, and at what point would you say, for example, whether the university would continue the genetic modification of native wild rice, for example, and pressure the legislature to not implement any concerns or regulations against that? At what point would you actually engage in that philosophical conversation amongst your university and recognize that perhaps there's a difference of opinion in your own institution? Who would make that decision, and how might that actually come forward to the legislature? And just a little more information, we, myself, and other legislatures have been working for several years to try to give a certain level of protection to Native Americans who are concerned about the possible genetic modification of native wild rice and the release of that. Yet, your institution, which, and I'm actually a student, have been a student there off and on for years, has worked actively against any efforts to provide that protection. I guess, how would that decision be made, and how would you respond to that question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moll, let me get to that part of your question in just a moment. What I'd like is the numbers chart. If you have that. I want to make another follow-up point in response to your question about the tuition issues in relationship to the budget. If you look at this part of our budget, we allocated tuition revenues against compensation and education. We did not allocate tuition revenues in this budget against funding research. I want to make that really clear. Now, it's our students have jobs in laboratories, and they work with professors, and they get scholarships to work with professors, and most of that's raised through private money. But we're not asking students to pay more tuition to support the University Extension Service, our research mission. I mean, I just want to be really clear and go on the record, and I think your question at least legitimately and importantly raised some issue in that area that I needed to clarify and didn't clarify in my earlier answer. You ask a very difficult question about how people set priorities in research, how they pursue their ideas and their curiosity, and what's the level of sort of regulation and control that should be exercised by the university and the state. I would argue this is a very dangerous path to tread. The decision as to what research people pursue at the university is done within all the legal requirements that are out there, promulgated by the state and the federal government. We have ethical review panels that look at all, you know, people have to file their plans. They're reviewed by peers. But the point I would really argue here is I think it's a mistake for the state to start to make decisions about what research is good to do and what research is not good to do. I think it's fine for the state, the federal government, to regulate with respect to standards of research that protect human subjects and protect the environment. But, you know, but I don't think it's an appropriate sort of ground to sort of attack what I consider the core academic freedom of a university. I think that's going down a path that will not serve our society well, and it certainly won't serve the long-term interests of the university. I know this has been a very contentious issue, and I've looked at it very intensively. I think our people have tried to work with Native American communities on these issues and have not been able, from what I can tell, to completely bridge the gap and viewpoint that exists in this area. But I don't think this is the kind of thing that ought to be regulated and controlled. I think we ought to encourage our researchers to work with the Native American communities and the communities of Minnesota on these issues, but I don't think it's something that is deserving of legislation and ought to be considered through a legislative means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your response, Mr. President. In regards to the specific legislation that the University of Minnesota was working against or has been, there's no restriction upon research at the university, nor would I personally carry a bill that would restrict academic freedom. I appreciate that. Personally and professionally, it's a legislation that would just seek a moratorium on the introduction should you choose or some other entity choose to actually plant it on the ground. 2 years. In no way would it prevent the university.
Is this a new law? I mean, newly proposed legislation?
No, it's been carried here for a few years.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make very clear what we're asking for.
Sure.
And I think under the slippery slope argument, the University of Minnesota has argued against it. And I think you can recognize, being in the academic environment, we deal in the area of gray, and as we do in politics. And
yeah.
Asking for your consideration on this issue.
Everything's black and white where I come from.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, I'm not familiar with the specifics of this bill, to be honest with you. I just know about the general issues, and I've consulted with people about these. I think our Vice President for Research would probably be in the best position to answer your question directly, and I'd be happy to ask him to sit down with you and talk with you. And he's a very reasonable and thoughtful person.
I would appreciate that.
But I must tell you that our relationship with the Native American communities in Minnesota means a great deal to us, and we value it very much, and we'll do everything possible to work with them. And I know this is a very difficult area, and it raises a number of questions that I think are very difficult to resolve, but we'll certainly be willing to talk to you about it.
Thank you.
Representative Guthrie.
My question's been asked and answered. Thank you.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Brunick, I was wondering if the governor gave you any rationale for why he funded only half of your request.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Horton, I think basically he made decisions to put, first of all, to constrain the growth and expenditures, in the state. I think he would argue that this is a pretty healthy recommendation. I don't happen to agree with his assessment. I think a recommendation in today's environment which is roughly $15 million less in what I consider to be permanent dollars, is not a really strong affirmative recommendation for the university at this time. I think he also wanted to make sure that the university paid attention to these areas of research that he strongly supports, and I agree with that part of his assessment. And I think he also wanted to make sure that he targeted some money, an additional $25 million of one-time money in the second year of the biennium, to encourage and incent the university and other state agencies to pay more attention to performance. And I must tell you that I don't worry about that for the University of Minnesota. I can't think of a single institution of higher education who worries more about measuring what it values than the University of Minnesota, and so I'm not at all intimidated by being asked or challenged to be more accountable and to be more publicly accountable. Unruffled by it, I welcome it. Okay, so that's not a problem to me. But it is a problem to try to fund long-term commitments of the university with one-time money. Now, we could use all the one-time money we could get, and I can give you a list that's pretty long for spending that money. But we can't use it to, let's say, pay the salaries of people, because it'll leave a $25 million hole 2 years from now, and that's just not responsible budgeting from my point of view. So I think there are a lot of reasons. I think it has to do with restraining the growth in state expenditure. He also put $92 million of recurring money in a new scholarship initiative, and I think he wanted to give that some priority. I happen to believe that, as much as I believe in scholarship initiatives of that kind, that's not as good of an investment as fixing the state grant program and fixing the core budgets of our two great institutions, Minsky and the University of Minnesota. I think you get a better return on investment by doing that. That allows us to keep the growth of tuition down, which I think is another policy objective that we all ought to pursue. So it's a difference of opinion and difference of priorities. I share some of his sense of what's important, and other parts that I would quite frankly disagree with. And I share those disagreements with him.
Just a follow-up. As a legislator, we're responding really to the governor's budget and proposing to, you know, either increase revenue to give people more than what he's proposing or to go with his recommendation. I feel like we're in a difficult spot when he shorts you $90 million and we need to find it, basically, if we think that your request is reasonable and funding you is important. And I just wanted to ask a question to you, and this is what I ask everybody who comes to my office and asks for money, is where would you like us to get it from? One of the things that you've said is the same thing that every mayor and school district has said to me, is get us off the roller coaster, because it's not efficient budgeting to have it really high 1 year and really low the next year. But the state is on a budget roller coaster because of the way we tax. We have a narrowly based sales tax. If the university wants to get off of the roller coaster, does it have a perspective of where it thinks the revenue should come from and in what ways it thinks the state should get off of the fiscal roller coaster that we're on?
Hi. Highly paid football coaches could bring in a lot of money here. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I will try not to respond to Representative Rukavina's last comment, because I do know there's a Surgeon General's warning on that one. But anyway, I'm happy to respond to it in the form of a question later. I can't give you advice on how to fix Minnesota's tax system. As a citizen, I have some privately held opinions that I think the tax system personally needs a good look. I think it has been a stable source of revenue for many years. But as you look ahead at the high number of retirees we expect in Minnesota's population, and as you look at the changing nature of our economy, I agree with your assessment that we ought to take a look at how we tax and how we get our revenues and whether that those revenue sources provide us the kind of stable resources we need to fund essential state services. But, you know, that's basically I'm pleased to say your problem. And I do have some opinions about it, and I'll tell you, if it means long term, that we have to put more and more of the cost of higher education on the backs of students, if it means long term that we got to experience this kind of roller coaster ride that we've had in the last 4 years, you can raise my taxes. You won't have any complaint from me. And that's just a personal editorial that probably get me into some difficulty. But if that's what it means, you know, it'd be up and down every year with little stability. Everybody knows we live in an uncertain world, and everybody knows you have recessions and you have surpluses. I mean, that's just a part of living. You have it in your family, you have it in your businesses, and you have it in government. So I don't think that's a problem. But I do think the state fiscal situation does need a look for a whole range of reasons. We have lots and lots of people that come into this state that use Minnesota services, and other states tax them much more than we do. So I would encourage you to take a look at it if it means that we can do a better job of keeping Minnesota strong for the future. I'd like to point out there's one of my fellow presidents in his first meeting with the board said, I want you to know that this university has done more with less for a lot of years. I'm here to tell you we're out of less. And I think that's the condition that we find ourselves in health and human services and education. I am not somebody who believes in, you know, really high rates of taxation per se. You know, I'm pretty moderate in my political views, and I'm fiscally conservative in pinching a penny back at the university. But I do think we have to invest. This was a state in the 1950s. In 1959, and this does not come from me, comes from the head of the research at the Federal Reserve Bank down here in Minneapolis, Art Rolnick. This state was 29th in per capita income in 1959. It is somewhere between 7 and 10 in per capita income today. And what happened in that period of time is people like you decided to invest in what economists call human capital. That's the education and development of people. And that's what's had more to do with this. It wasn't magic. It wasn't the Minnesota winners that made this happen. It was investment in people, investment in education at all levels. Now, that doesn't mean you throw money at the wall. You ought to hold our feet to the fire. We ought to use money wisely. If we don't use it wisely, you ought to criticize us and make sure we toe the line. And, you know, we have our obligations and responsibilities, too. But I don't think there's any way to get to a more creative, sustainable economic future for Minnesota than to invest in people, to invest in human capital. From the early stages of life to the older stages of life that I know are going to be even more productive than the one I'm in. Thank you.
Representative Hartman, members, you know, I think at this table I'm a second senior member next to Representative Murphy. And when I came here that first year, Governor Perpich wanted to conform to Ronald Reagan's new income tax structure. And I believe, Mary, we had maybe 14 class rates. We went like from 4% to 14.5%, and we went to 6 and 8. Then we added a top tier at 8.5. And I think I'm the only one on here on taxes. Am I? Is there anybody else on taxes in this committee? So we're going to have to decide if we're going to raise taxes at all, and where we're going to get the money from. But I, for one, would argue that, you know, our 1999 and 2000 income tax cuts and our 2001 tax bill, where we took over a lot of school districts that were off the formula, has put us in a basically a structural deficit forever. I don't see how we're getting out of this. So I've heard a lot of people talk about how the $1 billion that it cost in a 2001 tax bill would be easily paid for with the growth in the economy, with the economists, many smart economists, some people from the chamber and the business partnerships, that our economy was going to grow, and it didn't. And Last year we passed a transportation amendment that eventually takes another, what, $300 million out of a general fund. So we've got a lot of thinking to do this session if we're going to keep a lot of promises or even some of the promises that we made to the people in the state.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norman.
Backing up to where you started from, what was the state budget at that time?
Representative Norris, I think probably, I'm trying to think what the biennial budget was, if it was maybe $9 billion, I'm not sure. But I can tell you this, we didn't have that cost of government fictitious percentage that we look at, and, you know, that we include things like ski hills as the cost of doing government, and certain golf courses and liquor stores, I guess, are out of it now. But, you know, there's a lot of funny business.
But today we're at about $34 billion, correct?
We're getting up there.
Just pointing out that the state has increased its budget a lot in that period of time. Without raising taxes.
Representative Norris, we've raised a lot of taxes. We just happened to shift them. But this isn't the tax committee.
I understand.
And I just wanted to address what Representative Hartman said. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's nice to see you. You read the front page of the Sunday paper. I did, too, and I couldn't agree more with that newspaper.
I don't read the newspapers down here. They depress me. I only read the Masafa Daily News.
You might have liked last Sunday's. But President Brunick, thank you for coming today. Just kind of a first question. How many years did you spend in the classroom?
Well,
you know, you explain an awful lot when you come here.
I think I explain more because I miss it.
there's a couple of questions here. In this chart that you put out here, that from the fiscal year 00 up through 09, or actually through 07, because that's the year we're in, you've got tuition increases in the maroon. My question is that including fees, and if not, how much did fees increase, or what percentage? Because that's one of the complaints I've heard over the last couple, 3 years from people.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney. I'm getting a little helpful consultation from our Chief Financial Officer, but it includes tuition and an all university fee, but it doesn't include selected course fees. I should tell you that we have worked really hard to consolidate those fees and drive them down, to be honest with you. But there are selected course fees here and there at the university where there's heavy use of technology and laboratory equipment. But it includes at least the all-university fees.
Well, I just to answer you back, those with college-age students in our state system, our university system, could probably give you a pretty good clue as to how much that is. And,
I know what it is.
Someone told me just the other day how much more she want. I mean, how big of a check I would have to write on a monthly basis to kind of cover some of that. And I gladly write it because she's going to one of the best universities in the nation, as far as I'm concerned. And I can't wait till it's one of the top three research universities. The other question, and this is, I want some clarification on an answer you gave to Representative Rukavina, when he asked about a tuition increase, if we went with the governor's recommendation, and you said you would have to go to the Board of Regents using the governor's recommendation and ask for 4.5.
No.
Well, I understand that, but I must have heard it wrong. Hearing was 4.5. Now, could you repeat what you would have to go if you got the governor's recommendation? Just so I know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I indicated that I'm not prepared today to say exactly what that number is, but I am prepared to say today that if I had that number and that was the final outcome, I think it's inevitable that I would go to the board and ask for an increase about 4.5%. I would not, though, try to balance this budget solely on the backs of students and a tuition increase. We probably would cut more deeply into the university's budget, save money wherever we could possibly find it. I don't think that's going to be particularly easy for a university that's had to eat $250 million of inflationary and state budget reductions in the last few years, but we'd have to do that. We'd probably also reduce and slow down the investment strategies of the university. So if you look at the right-hand side of that column where I talked about many of those are biosciences investments that your committee has been examining, we'd have to slow those down. We just simply could not be as aggressive in making those investments. That's another place to spend money. We then probably have to take a look at tuition as one of the other sources of support. But if you balance this solely on tuition, probably have to push it up to around 10% a year. We're just not going to do that. I mean, our students have been through too much. Their families have been through too much. And so we'd make other sacrifices, you know, and that may be an invitation to reduce the size of the budget allocation to the University of Minnesota. But I have to be brutally honest. We wouldn't put this all on the backs of students. I mean, I wouldn't find that to be acceptable. But I will tell you that the odds are pretty darn high that I would add something to 4.5 if we came out at this level.
If you did raise it 10% a year, I think we'd have to start publishing the exact location of your home.
So it's already pretty well known. Another story.
Representative Mahoney, do you have another follow-up? Before you follow-up, Representative Poppy has reviewed the minutes extensively and moves to approve them. Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney.
No, in the interest of time, I'll just pass.
I'm going to just let Representative Detmer and then ask one last question. Then would you come back tomorrow?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, there's a number of other questions, and we're supposed to be out of here in a minute.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President Brunick. Looks like the biggest shortfall in the governor's proposal, recommendation, and the university's request is that of the compensation. I think you mentioned you stand like 27th in the nation. Where do you stand in the Big Ten?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think we're roughly what, about midpoint or... Yeah, about the midpoint in the Big Ten on total compensation. But we don't always compete with the Big Ten. You know, the 60 to 75 people that I'm talking about are going anywhere in the world. And it's not uncommon to fight off Princeton and Harvard and Berkeley and, you know, any of the best, Cambridge. You know. So you have to pay attention to the Big Ten market, and we do. We benchmark ourselves there, and it's a good question, but we also have to benchmark ourselves to institutions that are beyond the Big Ten.
Thank you. Members, if you'd leave your hard-bound copies of the budget here, I think you can get copies online if you want them. With that, and I believe also Doug Berg put in a summary of the governor's changes for you also. You hear that you can take with you. With that, thank you, members. Mr. President, thanks for coming today. We'll see you tomorrow. Meeting.
Great.